So could we start by your giving me your full name?
Yes, Orville Willard Trump.
Trump.
Trump, T-R-U-M-P.
Mm-hmm. And was this a long line of Trumps?
Yes, I'd say there's a considerable number of Trumps in this area.
Mm-hmm. And when you said you're the son of one of the pioneers, who was the pioneer in your family?
His name was Jonah. Jonah.
Jonah Trump?
Yes.
And he came by wagon from...
I can't tell you just exactly where he did come out here, but they came out to... I know they came part of the way on the train and then traded off and went by horses and wagons the rest of the way.
Now, the train came through here in about 1880, didn't it?
The train, I believe he said, talking to other people at that time, the train stopped at the Union Station, the little Union Station, mm-hmm. over Union.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they got most of them got off the train.
Well, do you think it might have been between 1880 and 1900 that he came?
Oh, I know it was in the 1880s, late 1880s.
Good. That was soon after the train was put through.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you know what brought them here?
Well, just like everybody else, I guess.
Farming?
Farming, logging. They just, some people came out here and sell them a good big bill of goods to become pioneers. I guess they believed them.
Why do you mean a bill of goods?
Well, told them how wonderful the place was.
Oh, yeah. A little bit exaggerated,
so,
maybe.
So forth, you know.
Did they have a promise of land?
This was never completely understood between the pioneers themselves and the people that actually designated the land to them.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but they just ended up having, you might say, some of the lesser parts of the country and the land that was farming, lots of timber, canyons, that type of thing.
So if they got off at the Union Station, did they stay around the Grand Ronde Valley for a while before going up to Olawa?
No. It was all of this was, it was about three or four different families, big families, Trumps and Carpers and Fleshmans and some of this was all together. And they all went into the Olawa country.
Mm-hmm.
And
right away?
Yes, that's what they're designated for.
Oh, I see.
So they didn't, this part of the country was already pretty well taken up.
Yeah.
Being a nice valley and finally. They ended up more or less with the tail end of the of the trip, I guess you would say.
So would the Olawa Valley have been pretty much unsettled at that time?
The larger ranchers, cattle ranchers and things like that, had pretty well taken up most of the country. And they were still having some trouble with the Indians a little bit in that area.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't bother the folks any.
Uh-huh. And were you born in Olawa County?
I was born in Promise, Oregon, in Olawa County.
Uh-huh. What year?
1922.
I see. Well, they've been around for quite a while.
Yes.
So was Jonah your grandfather then?
Jonah was my grandfather.
Okay. And
Fred was my father.
Okay. How old was Fred then?
I believe he was born the year that they came here, in 1900 anyway.
You know. I see. So he was a pretty young man when he fathered you.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
Where did he find a wife?
Well, that was part of the group that came out were large families, and one of them happened to be Sanner. And my mother was one of the Sanners. I think they had 10 children in that family.
How do you spell that name?
S-A-N-N-A-R. Lots of Sanners spell E-R.
Would that be a German name?
Can't tell you. I was thinking it was from Northern England, but I'm not sure.
I think. So you said you were born in 1922.
Two.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. 5 years before I was.
5 years.
And by that time, your father had a pretty well-established ranch, did he?
No. That's what they were expecting to be able to do when they came out here. And when they got into the Willow country, as you know what the Willow country is like,
yep.
The only thing that was available for them then was north of the Willow and the Grand Ronde River country. And they all ended up in what's called Grand Ronde River, the Troy country.
Uh-huh. And promises.
And promises part of that, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
And nothing but mountains and timber, more or less. But they, some ways, lots of them, like they say, scout out a living. Nobody knows how, but...
It was a pretty low-level subsistence?
Oh, yes.
What do you remember about your early years as far as the physical circumstances were?
Well, actually, my earlier years, must I remember, of course, is when I started school or before I started school, and I was actually born in a two-room log cabin. And that's where I lived my first 9 years of life.
Mm-hmm.
And by then...
Were you the first child?
No, I was the fifth child.
Fifth?
No, fourth. Fourth child.
Why, they got started young.
Yeah, I got nothing. I could say nothing else to do, you know. I think mother was 17 and dad was 18 when they got married.
Uh-huh. And they just popped out the babies one after the other.
Mm-hmm. Right away.
Mm-hmm.
But lots of them went into logging area. There's a big lumber company got moved into that Willow Valley country.
And is that what your father did?
Started building railroads and logging, and father started out logging and working teams and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was lucky enough to get a job with the government delivering mail from Promise to Willow, which was 25 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all horse work, of course. So he had a pretty good job even up to the middle of the Depression.
Yeah.
And that's when it got away from everybody, and they all moved out of that country. There was nothing they could do.
Is that when your parents...
That's when our parents moved
to Elgin.
To Elgin. Mm-hmm. Right.
And what, you were about 10 or 11 then?
I was about, yes, just 11 years old.
Mm-hmm. And you all packed up in a wagon and came to Willow, or did you have a car by then?
No. Dad was lucky enough getting this government job that was able to save a little money and raise a few cows and so forth and sell them every fall, cows and pigs. So he's able to, and he bought him a Ford Model D pickup, because he's always hauling freight.
Uh-huh.
Before that, he hauled it by wagon to Willow, and nothing but just old rutted out roads, as you might know.
So he piled all the kids in the back of the pickup?
Every place you want to go.
With a little bit of furniture?
Yeah, and it took off.
Do you remember how you felt about that?
I don't know as you feel when you're 9, 10 years old.
You do what Dad says.
You're going,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I know I really hated to change schools because he was in a little one-room schoolhouse.
Yeah.
And I was the only child in my grade. And then my brothers went on up, and so I gained quite a bit, I thought, by being one of the younger ones, because by the time they're in the sixth grade, here I am in the first grade, and I get to listen to everything the teacher teaches.
Sure.
But I found out that it didn't work that way. When you got to the country, to the town school, it's all on a different scale.
Yeah. By that time, the Elgin schools had different grades?
Oh, yes.
Was that bewildering to you at first?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You just couldn't hardly get used to it, you know. You pretty well lost.
Yeah.
Because you're always with your bigger brothers before.
But did you enjoy going to school?
Oh, yes, I always liked school.
Mm-hmm. And you did well?
Well, pretty well. I love sports, and back in those days, a small guy had a chance in sports.
Yeah.
And I did fine in sports.
Okay. What are some of your impressions about being in what would have been at about sixth grade in Elgin?
Yeah, we moved there when I was in fifth grade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What were your impressions about that at first?
Well, lost. No idea, you know, here you're sitting with 25 or 30 little kids in these little old desks along the way, and you don't know what you're supposed to say, what you're supposed to do, or even what the teacher was, hardly.
But that, you got over that fairly quickly, I suppose.
Oh, yes. Yes, 2 or 3 months after Christmas vacation, like, kind of, kids got more friendly, and then the depression was really hitting tough, and everybody, nobody had any clothes, and this type of thing. We all looked alike, and that helped a lot. There was always 2 or 3 rich man's kids, but they got teased more than anything else. Yeah.
So you weren't unhappy then, I suppose?
No, no. Mm-hmm. In fact, after I got about 7th grade, I was real happy because I realized that you could compete with your fellow sitting next to you in sports and this type of thing. Mm-hmm. And once you, that took over, why, you always wanted to beat the other guy.
Now, what sorts of sports were you playing?
I played basketball from the time I was in the 6th grade all the way through and up into our college. But I, Army decided it was going to take me, so I joined the Navy after that. But about that time, too, I was 19 and I was just ready to go. And I pitched baseball 5 years. Tore my arm all to pieces, but had lots of fun at baseball.
Sounds like you were maybe a little too energetic about it.
Only weighed 145 pounds, mm-hmm. and I didn't have much speed, but I could sure throw a crooked ball.
At that time, did baseball and basketball teams travel to other schools to play?
Yes.
So you'd go to where? To Union and LeGrand and other towns in the valley?
All the way from Joseph to Enterprise, Elgin, mm-hmm. all the way to Baker. 2 or 3 times a year, we'd get over, all the way over to John Day.
That was a pretty big adventure, I should think.
32 to 35 games.
Yeah. Did they have a bus for you?
Well, the individual automobiles.
Oh.
They paid these fellas to take 5 kids in their cells.
High school boys?
Yes, all of us on the same team. Mm-hmm.
I see.
And lots of times we'd have to stay over in the wintertime. We had snow in that country, or in this country, actually, back then.
Now, I should think under those conditions, boys who tend to be rowdy sometimes might have gotten into some trouble.
Well, I don't think that ever happened.
No, you don't. I don't believe you. was there some drinking?
No, not boy. Back in high school, and they said, no, you believed them or you didn't play on the bay or any ball clubs. That was all there was to it. Mm. You didn't have to be seen by the coach or fellow driving the truck or the bus or whatever he's driving. You was gone. So he was no kidding, a lot of good clean-cut kids.
Mm-hmm. No sexual activity?
No, God, no women going with us. They're girls.
Nevertheless, there are temptations along the way.
Oh, yes, always temptations, but he was very careful that you didn't end up being one of the ones who was, got involved in that.
What would have been the punishment?
Just kicked off the team. Mm-hmm. Just boom. Mm-hmm. That's a long life when you're one of the star athletes and just stay in study hall all day today.
Do you think on the whole that boys especially had a lot of self-restraint during that period?
Yes. They were trained that way from the time they were little kids.
By their parents?
By their parents, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
How
well, they had big families. Yeah. They found many girls that did boys, and boy, he was trained at home.
And what did some of that training consist of? How would they do it?
With battle.
Corporal punishment, huh?
Yes, absolutely.
Was there fear then involved?
Well, yes, some. Because a lot of times, you know, you want to go someplace back then. Want to go someplace and stay all night with your buddy. Mm-hmm. You'd have better been good for the last 2 or 3 weeks, or you wouldn't go anyplace to stay all night. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of training.
Yeah.
And you really, you believe them. My parents were not the type to beat you with a club or a belt. They knew how to use the words.
For trips, you'd need money for food and a place to stay. Where did that come from?
The schools, where's that?
Their budget.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Were you on winning teams most of the time?
Most of them. Mm-hmm.
And I suppose then, as it tends to be now, the people on the teams, and this wasn't usually girls then, was it?
No.
But the people on the team tended to be looked up to by many of the other kids in the school. Is that the way it was?
Yes.
So there was a sense of pride in being on the team.
Certainly.
Did that spill over into any of your academic work? That feeling of pride?
Well, yes. You got a 2.5 grade average, 2.5.
Minimum.
Or you didn't play. Yeah. Now you get a 1.1, you can still play.
Right.
So I can't understand that
there's
idea of education nowadays.
Well, it's changed, yes. There are some kids, however, who are well-disciplined and focused, and they do extremely well.
That's true.
And of course, at the time that we went to school, a lot of kids just left school at the end of eighth grade.
Yes, they had no choice.
So the group of people who were more interested in studying in high school was narrowed down.
That's
now, that doesn't happen.
No.
That's part of what accounts, I think, for different standards. You said you went into the Navy, or you enlisted in the Navy instead of being drafted into the Army.
Right.
That was about 1940 or so?
1942.
42, right after, or shortly after.
Just when I started.
Harbor.
Yeah. I went in 42.
Uh-huh.
So I'd have been drafted in 41.
What was there about the Navy that you preferred?
Well, I like to say, as long as you got a ship, you got a home. You got a meal and you got a bed to sleep in.
Yeah. Is that the way it was?
Pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Except when you got in a battle or two.
Uh-huh. You know. I don't want to go into the whole story of your military experience, but what places did you get to?
Not too far. I went to, I was lucky enough, like I say, I had fair grades in school. And I was lucky enough to get selected by the Navy to go to a diesel engineering school. Back then we had no diesel engines to speak of, and we lost most of them over in Pearl Harbor to boot.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started building a brand new campus at Ames, Iowa at the college for nothing but diesel engineering students, and I was selected to go to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to that till I graduated from that. It was almost 300 of us in that. And we were supposed to go into some brand new ships that they were building, which happened to be three great big old ships, you know, because we lost almost all of our ships back over there.
Battleship, cruiser type?
Battleship, mm-hmm. Battleships.
Mm-hmm.
And we graduated. They say, well, it'll be about a year for the ship ready to go.
Mm.
We're that far behind on building those ships.
Yeah.
It took them a lot longer than they thought. And so they transferred all of us over in the amphibious force. Here we are, diesel engineers, stuck in the amphibious force. And we went down to Newport News, that's where they sent us, and just loaded a bunch of us on ships and everything in the world and give us a little bit of training and start us overseas.
Well, the amphibious force would have used LSTs, wouldn't they?
That's right.
And they, I know they had diesel engines.
That's what I was on.
Yeah, because I went on one of those between Tokyo and Seoul, Korea.
Yeah.
And I remember vividly the diesel smoke.
Yep.
All over the place.
That's what I was on.
Uh-huh.
And we got a little bit of a torpedo up in the North Atlantic going across.
Mm-hmm. Do you mean that you were there as part of the crew, the maintenance crew?
Yes, we were taking the ships over the big flotilla.
Yeah.
It was going up through Iceland and Greenland and over into England and getting ready to invade in Africa.
Yeah. But
never did get there. In other words.
Was it your job to maintain the engines on the on the ship?
Yes.
Okay. Did the school teach you how to do that?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I used that all my life.
Yeah. And then when you were discharged, what was that, in about 1945 or 6?
No, to the Navy hospital.
Tore up, you mean hit by some kind of explosion?
Right.
Explosion?
Torpedo. German torpedo.
Right.
And don't know for sure what went on or why, but they said there was 134 ships in our flotilla.
Right.
And we were only 7 days out of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went through a lot of rehab.
I guess. Successful?
Yes, pretty well.
Okay. All right, at the end of that, then you were honorably discharged, I assume.
Honorably discharged.
Then college?
I got married while I was in the Navy.
Well, where did you meet her?
Met her back at Iowa State College.
At Ames.
At Ames.
Yeah.
But she was from a little town of Hudson, South Dakota, which was in the corner just below Sioux City.
Was she working there or a student?
She was working there. Her uncle owned had a contract with the government and all the cabs. The campus was 2 miles from town. And she was working part-time, taking phone calls and stuff in the hotel.
I see.
And that's where I met her.
Mm-hmm. And the attraction was strong enough that she waited around till you were discharged. Is that it?
No.
No.
Here I am going to diesel school and she's nothing to do when I leave, if I leave, but, you know. Anyway, we only knew each other about 7 weeks and got married.
Before you left Ames?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
I left Ames.
So she had to sit around somewhere while you were on
just a week later, I left.
Well, I know that happened often. You weren't the only one who decided to do that. Yeah. So when you had gotten married, and then when you're discharged, you came back to...
Came back here, yes.
To here?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I see. What caused you to do that?
Well, Caterpillar at that time was just getting started with diesels. And, of course, I had special training on diesel. And also the railroad had diesel engines, the same diesel engines on the train out here that we had in the LSTs.
Ah.
Same ones.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And so I kind of had a choice. And my wife helped me with that.
I'm
going to stay home.
I've forgotten when the transition between steam and diesel actually got started.
The only one that really running during the war was what they called the Portland Rose.
Yeah.
Through this country, it was just mainline diesels, and there was two or three big freight outfits that had the diesels. And
that would in the 40s, the early 40s, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
To get on those, you rode the train. In other words, you'd get on the train in Portland, you'd go all the way to Omaha, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
You sleep one night going and so forth,
yep.
Come back, and then you'd spend 3 days at home and then be gone 2 or 3 days again.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was no way to be married, young people, and raising a family. So I went to work for Caterpillar Tractor Company as one of the diesel people on the... What am I trying to say here? Well, anyway, he was a dealer. The only dealer they had in the whole country, about three states here, and they only had two dealers back then. Diesel was just coming out.
This is for farm machinery?
This is for farm machinery.
Yeah.
Logging and
yeah.
Contracting, a lot of contractors were. And so right after the war broke out, I just stayed right here. Worked here most all my life until I got into management, and that was a pretty nice deal for me. We had a pretty good territory, and finally I got tired of staying in the same old place and made a move up to Yakima, and I stayed there for 2 years and decided I didn't like Washington. So I moved back down to Pendleton, and I stayed over there 28 years. And
nice.
I worked for Caterpillar and John Deere.
Yep.
As a manager over there.
In the earlier times when you were associated with Caterpillar, was the office in Pendleton?
They had, when I went to work for them, their main office was in Boise, Idaho.
Oh.
I went to work as one of the fellows stationed here. They had management and everything there. We had a pretty good sized crew. I say a size crew. When I went to work for them, there's 7 of us in the service department.
Mm-hmm. Where exactly was it? The office, the headquarters.
The one that was here?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see. You know where Goss's place is?
Yes.
But right around the corner on Jefferson, there's a square, flat square building,
uh-huh.
Big one. And at that time, it was all windows around. And that's where our main office was.
Mm-hmm.
Took in about half a block.
Mm-hmm.
And
did
everything,
you have...
everything had to be hauled in and unloaded to go from the railroad over there.
Did you have the equipment there, the farm machines?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And if we just had 2 little lots behind, and if we got too many, then
mm-hmm.
you'd have a lot out to one side or some place where they could store that machinery.
What were the main kinds of farm machinery that people wanted at that time?
Well, it was a lot like it is now, because like Caterpillar, for instance, it had the old gas engines. A lot of them had been out before the Army of the War. And of course, the farmers made pretty good money during the war.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they started updating into about same type things like a D2 diesel, a D4 diesel, D6 diesel. And then the loggers came in, and then they went into the bigger stuff, D6s, 7s, and 8s,
mm-hmm.
big dozers, contractors. And
mm-hmm.
it was a going concern.
I suppose the equipment got more expensive each year with new models.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. It looked just like it is today.
Yeah.
Still, it hasn't changed one bit. Wages always hanging behind.
What would have been the life of some of those machines if they were in active service? 5 years? 10 years?
They had a depression time set on them at 10 years. But most of them had run 20 easy.
Mm-hmm. What happened to the old machines? They were just abandoned someplace?
A lot of them abandoned, put in a lot of outfits, put in big used sales lots. And there's always that other guy, a chipper logger or somebody,
yeah.
that picked those up, and he had lots of used parts.
Mm-hmm.
So they had no problems getting parts.
Have you seen that big collection of old farm machinery in Baker on the way to the Interpretive
yes,
Center?
Yes.
Do you know anything about that?
I don't know anything at all about that. I do know that one old fellow's had that for many, many, many years.
It looks as though he means it to be a museum.
Well, he meant to be that to start with. I think the old fellow died last year, before. I'm not sure about that now.
So do you think it's just being left to rust?
Yes, more or less.
That's too bad.
In fact, I have actually sent farmers up there that had problems that we couldn't get any parts for, and they'd go up to see if he had
So they're scavenging?
Oh, no. He's got a little place over there. You don't want to start to scavenge.
Well, I don't mean taking it, but they're taking parts off some of
yes,
these old machines.
They can't buy it because the factory quit making it. So
mm-hmm.
It's still runnable if we can find the part.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of those. There's one out of Salem, and there's one up at Lynn, Washington.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What was most enjoyable about working for a company like Caterpillar? Good wages?
Well, actually, wages are comparative to everybody else's.
Yeah.
And that's the way they've always done it. Because whether it's Caterpillar International or GMC or Cadillac, they make darn sure that you're within a few dollars a day of what the other guys are getting. There's mm-hmm. one guy's going to have all the business.
Yeah.
And so wages really didn't, unless you were the foreman or somebody like that, didn't enter into it too much. They just had, they paid fair, and they paid right, and they had good living conditions, and they'd hire somebody, they had good pension plans and that type of thing, and just a good place to work. But it's changed a lot now.
Yeah. At the time then, I guess you had the impression it was a well-run company?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And of course it was a worthwhile product.
You didn't have to worry about looking for a job.
No. And I imagine then that, you said they had a good retirement plan?
After many years of fighting, and most all of the dealers, it got to the place to where the dealers were not unionized. Because the fellows getting the same kind of wages as the unionized guys were out here on construction jobs, and they weren't paying the dues. So it got the place where the unions and the contractors and people like that were having a lot of fights and stuff like that to try to union try to get the money out of them.
By the time that was had started happening, were you in management?
Oh yes.
So how did the fighting about unions affect you?
Well, the only thing you did, you had to be just a little bit smarter than the guy who was talking to you. treat your people right,
yeah.
Give them good training, and I had darn good training service meetings. After 4 years, you was declared a diesel mechanic. And that's something that the union was always trying to get away from you because they had no such a thing as that. And that was one place you could keep.
While you were there then, did your employees become unionized?
No.
Never did?
They did when I left.
Mm-hmm. After you left?
Mm-hmm. But I just didn't work that way, and the people I had were happy. And mm-hmm. After I left their way.
When did you leave the company?
Well, I left the company when we were here. We sold out the dealerships that we had here in Northeast Oregon and bought a dealership in Washington. And we went right through the 10 counties through up the middle of Washington from all the way up to the big dams and that type of thing. And I stayed there, like I say, about 2 years. I think I left there in 68. Came down here and I said, I'm never going to take another Boston job in my life. No more. After 25 years, I had it up. And heck, I said, well, go out and do a little selling. I think I can sell something. Of course, I've been selling all my life, really, but that type of job. And after about not even a year, they had trouble with one of the parts managers. And boss came to me and he said, Orma, would you mind going in there and running that parts department? This is John Deere, running the parts department until I can find a parts manager. And I said, yeah, fall of year's coming, I won't be able to sell anything in spring anyway. I took that and left there, to stayed there 10 years.
And where was that office?
That's in Pendleton.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And after that, figured that's enough.
Yeah. During these years when you were employed by Caterpillar and John Deere, what were your political preferences?
I didn't have any. I've never been a political man. I vote for the person that can do the job.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me who you voted for president over those years.
Well, probably the pretty ones. You just named the presidents and
the ones who were elected.
You bet.
Did you admire Harry Truman?
Yes, I sure did.
Mm-hmm. Almost everybody did, yeah. At least later. At the time, you remember, there was a lot of controversy about him.
Well, yeah.
And everybody said, well, he's not qualified to be president. What is this little runt doing?
Well, I wasn't qualified to be a manager either.
Often the way, that's the way it works out. Yeah. And then, had you had any contacts with Eisenhower during the war? Or seen him?
No, he was strictly Army and I was strictly Navy.
Yeah, right.
And I think Eisenhower was all right. He was pretty wishy-washy, but I probably shouldn't say that.
Well, some of the information coming out now suggests that he was less so than he appeared to be.
Right.
He had a different way of managing things.
Yeah.
Did you vote for Nixon?
No.
Well, there's one case where you must have seen something about him that you didn't like.
Well, just his looks and the way he handled himself. Mm-hmm. That's all, because I didn't know the man.
Mm-hmm.
I could say I voted for the person.
Yeah. As you reflect on political activities in this country, why do you think you didn't develop an interest in it?
Number one, the type of job I had and the way I worked all the time and raising a family, I just couldn't see where you had really time to do a decent job to both. take care of your job or go into politics and go for broke.
Oh, well, I don't mean going into politics, but just knowing enough about politics to have some well thought out opinions.
Oh, I think I did that pretty well because I spent a lot of time on the road in hotels and stuff. Mm-hmm. I did quite a bit of that, but I wouldn't. No politicking for me.
Okay. Well, I wasn't thinking that you would wanted to be in politics.
Oh, okay.
Were you a regular newspaper reader?
Pretty well.
Editorial section?
Very seldom ever.
Oh. That's where you get most of your political opinions, of course.
Right.
Yeah. your family, one or more children, I guess?
Had four.
Four.
Mm-hmm. Three boys and a girl.
What's happened to them?
My daughter is here, her and her family.
In LeGrand?
Still in LeGrand. I have two boys in Corvallis and one boy up in Bellingham, Washington.
Uh-huh.
And they just took off on their own ways. Which wasn't any of my business. They're grown people.
Did they go into any kind of engineering activity?
They didn't, but I have a grandson that is.
Mm. Civil, mechanical, what?
Yeah, he's working for Caterpillar, actually. He's a shop foreman down there in Caterpillar.
That must please you.
Yeah.
Do you see him very much?
No, not too much.
Mm-hmm.
But he went to Blue Mountain College up there and took diesel engineering and was going to go work for the trucking outfit. And Caterpillar paid him too much money.
Do you think you might have influenced his decision to go into diesel engineering?
Yep.
Did you talk to him a lot?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And obviously he listened. Yeah.
He wouldn't listen to his dad.
That's often the way. Yeah. I wanted to be a doctor for a long time, chiefly because my grandfather was a doctor.
Yeah.
I didn't do that, however. Do you get back to Wallowa County now at all?
Not very much. And I haven't for the last year and a half, because I've been, like, I've got to have a heck of a spinal operation, and I've ended up being a fake. I mean, it didn't work, so I'm worse off now, and I don't turn my head this much, as you can see.
Right.
And so I've got lots of pain in the base of my skull and down between the shoulders, so I had to quit work and a lot of that type of thing. And then I stepped where I shouldn't have stepped and fell and hit my head against the washing machine and crushed my skull about a year and a half ago, and that's the reason I'm in here.
Yeah. Was your spinal problem related, do you think, to your wartime injuries?
I say yes, but I couldn't prove it. VA still takes care of me most of the time. They've been great to me.
What was the nature of the spinal symptoms? Was it pain in the up and down the back a lot?
Oh yeah, and concussion. I tore up the inside of my stomach an awful lot and tore a lot of my internal organs loose and everybody in there and screwed them back together like they said, but they used some kind of wire or something.
Okay.
It got me fixed up pretty good. And I don't digest my food like most people do. I have to eat more often.
Mm-hmm.
I don't digest it.
Had you had these difficulties while you were working too?
No, you mean now?
Well, the spinal problem, for instance, had that been
recurring
while you were working?
Yeah, it kept coming on.
That makes it even more likely, I guess, that it was related to the war injuries.
Right.
Yeah. At the time, though, you thought it was mainly your leg?
No. See, I have this leg thing came on after all this other stuff.
Well, you said when the torpedo hit the ship, your leg was injured and you were in the hospital for 11 months.
No, my back and the internal organs.
Then, at that time,
what? At that time, my leg.
I see. So this really has been a lifelong problem.
Yes, it just grew along with you, you know.
Yeah.
And you got to the place where you wouldn't have been able to be a full-fledged working mechanic.
when you get VA care, where do you have to go?
Walla Walla.
I see. You know Walla Walla pretty well now.
Pretty well. Yeah, and they have a bus that goes over every 2 weeks, and I need to go over there for some reason. I just holler for the bus man.
A bus that the VA provides? Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
Good service.
Yeah.
How's the care over there? Well, you said the spinal operation was not a success.
No, that was in Warren part of.
Oh, I see.
In the do only ever, you know, once. I'm not very happy with those people, in other words.
Yeah. What made you decide to come here?
Well, I was raised in Elgin.
I mean, to this retirement residence.
Well, because it was close to home, and one thing, and we looked at a lot of these, and I was down to 117 pounds when I came here.
Huh. How long ago was that?
Less than 2 years.
I see. Mm-hmm. Is your wife here too?
Oh, she passed away.
I see. Mm-hmm. Before you came here?
Yes, before I came here, but I fell and got hurt, and she passed away while I was still in a coma.
Troubles come all at once.
Yeah. But this is a real nice place.
Mm-hmm. What do you like about it?
It's roomy. It's new. It's well cared for. There's some things that's weak and some things that's strong. That happens because there's no two of us feel the same way about anything.
Yeah.
A lot of people tell you it's terrible, but it is, and it's a great place. The meals for the bigger this place is, I told a lot of them, try to spend 10 bucks a day, you all spend more. See what you get,
yeah.
You know. But I like it fine, because I know I can't do anything else about it. I can when I get, I'm working on this one eye was so, I thought it was this eye that's giving me troubles, and I was seeing double and triple, and I had to quit driving cars and stuff like that. And I went to several different outfits, both specialized, and they put different kinds of glasses on me and so forth, working on the left eye. So I finally found the dentist, fixed my teeth all up, and he said, well, now that'll help you a little bit, because you had some bad teeth, you know. Well, then when I got through with that, well, I heard about a dentist, eye doctor over in Walla, and well, there's seen in 15 minutes, he said, they've been working on the wrong eye. 2 years they've been working on the wrong eye. I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, just because you had your skull crushed up here, here's where your trouble is, it's in this eye.
Yeah.
This eye went kaput, well then it took all the power away from this eye to try to keep alive over here, so they wrecked this eye. Mm-hmm. So now he's working on both eyes, and I can actually read a newspaper the first time in 2 years.
Yeah.
I don't know how much longer it will go.
How do you spend your days? What do you do?
Seem like there's never a dull moment.
That's good.
I don't know. That's another thing you like about this place. They had this young girl with you there.
Joyce.
She's the darnest kid you ever seen. She's got stuff all the time. And they don't pressure you to do anything. They don't care if you don't do one thing. Just get up and eat one and what you eat, and you can have the rest of it, you know. They clean your bedrooms, and they clean everything. You don't have to do anything but take your own bath, really. And a lot of people say, oh, that would be terribly boring. She's always got bingo, or she's got horseshoes, or she's got stuff for the women to do, like crocheting and all this kind of stuff that keeps everybody busy. And you come out here during the afternoon or mornings and you won't see over four or five people out around this place. They're all busy doing
stuff. So it feels like a healthy climate then.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you get away from
that? That's one man's opinion.
Yeah, of course. I'm not asking you for anybody else's. Do you get away on trips or downtown?
Oh, yes. They have a bus of their own here, you know. And say on Monday mornings, they'll have a shopping trip. They'll take 14 people out shopping. You can go shopping wherever you want. They'll say that you want to go down to Red Cross Drugstore. They'll take you down there at a certain time, and they'll leave you there for 1 hour. Mm-hmm. Then they pick you up in that 1 hour. The next person might be wanted out of Walmart. Mm-hmm. They'll do the same thing for that person. So if they don't, you can go where you need to go,
yeah.
But you got to go on a certain day. And then they go like Mondays and Wednesdays and Fridays. And they have bus tours. Run you around over the county or up in the mountains and look around, especially the older people who's not from this country.
Yeah.
Well, that's great for them. They sit around and they talk about it. You know how great it was to see one old doe deer, you know. But it's there if you want to use it.
You're probably one of the younger ones here, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
At least on this side, I don't know anything about this side.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been here several times. I get the impression you may be one of the younger ones.
But you never thought that 18 months ago.
Yeah, you looked a lot different then. Yeah.
Sounds a lot different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you got to make your own.
Yep.
Can't lay around here and expect some doctor up on the hill to cure you.
That's right.
It's not going to work.
That's right. You have to be a full participant.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Of course, I learned that in 1940.
Yes. I'm sure there are many other things I could ask you, and maybe I would like to continue, but I think that's enough for now.
Well, whatever.
I'm going to turn this into a one-page summary, so there are a lot of things I'll leave out.
Oh, yeah.
But we're giving about the same amount of space to each of the people we interviewed here. And then, especially for the people who have lived in Union County for a long time, we do plan to come back and do more intensive interviews.
Well, yeah, like the North Willow County, when you start talking to most of these people who actually lived here all their life or in this place, don't have any idea what Promise is, or Troy, or
You'd have to make a special trip to get there, don't you? It's not on the highway, the main highway. There's a school up there that was recently Flora School. Isn't Flora nearby?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just across the canyon.
And that school was I think fairly recently
completely remodeled.
Done over. Yeah.
I want to get up there and see that. Go to Enterprise and George Troy.
I haven't done that either. I'd like to.